All right, we've covered a lot of ground in our time together. Over the past 2 years, went through almost a third of Revol Be Sefer. One of my teachers did this in Jewish history Dr. Ari Mermelstein. Like halfway through the semester, he said, okay, today's the first day of class. We're like, no, it's not. And he said, now I'm going to read you the introduction to what we're doing in this class, because until you've actually done something, until you've actually seen it, you're not really going to be able to appreciate what we're trying to accomplish or what we're doing. And so he read the introduction, like I think it was 2 weeks before the midterm. And so I believe I checked, and we never actually did this in any capacity. And so Revol Be starts out his sefer with an introduction of what we're going to try and accomplish. And after learning this, whether it's been for a few weeks, months, or years, now maybe we can appreciate on a little bit of a deeper level of what is Revol Be trying to accomplish in this sefer. We could just say Musar, but that's a little bit too broad. What are we really trying to do? First, I just think it needs to be pointed out. There are about 10 pages of introduction. There's like the approbations and all these different things. His name doesn't show up anywhere in the entire sefer. You would never know that Revol Be wrote Al Ishur, because it literally doesn't say it anywhere. It's anytime in the letters of approbation, the Haskamot, his name gets skipped. They like give a dot, dot, dot or something. It's fascinating that he's not in this sefer. I just thought it was interesting. So we get to the Mavo Kleli. Oh, where's my sheets? And I was torn, because the next piece that comes up is about tefillah. And we could talk about tefillah, and it would be nice, it would be wonderful, but I think a lot of us have talked about tefillah many times, and I'm sure that Revol Be would have an insight that we haven't thought about before. But what we're going to discuss today is something that's a little bit harder to understand, but much more fundamental, and might be able to give us a step up and a step forward and change our perspective a little bit. That might help us in the rest of our learning of the Sefer and just in general in our Avodas Hashem. And so Revol Be in his introduction talks about, he quotes from the Chovos HaLevavos. Chovos HaLevavos was written by Rav Vachya ibn Shaprut, not that it matters, but he written about 1200, and he talks about, you know, what are the things that we need to, what are our obligations in our lev? And lev we often translate as heart, but he's really referring to our mind, and our mind and our hearts are very closely linked, particularly when it comes to our Avodas Hashem. And we talk about feelings, but our feelings aren't really in our hearts. They're really in our minds. And so the connection is very strong, and so lev will often, in many, many cases, mean mind. And so we'll jump in, although we're going to be outside of our sheets for a lot of today, but we'll get there. And starting the second paragraph, because the first one, he's just explaining what's the goal, and he quotes in the Balak Chovos HaLevavos. So second paragraph, very beginning of the sefer, page 11, line 6. Balak Chovos HaLevavos quotes the Hakdama L'Sifro. His Hakdama, we're quoting in our Hakdama. Ha'adam Mechuber L'Nefesh V'Kuf. A person is made up of two things, a body and a neshama, which we'll say soul. There are really five different words that have a connotation of soul. So soul is not really precise enough to explain the neshama, but for our context, we'll say soul. And that's sufficient. For another time, we can get into the details. But he says, Shnehim meitova sabora aleinu. Both of them are gifts from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Echad nira v'asheni eino nira. And that's going to be significant here. One of them is clearly visible. I can see my body. We can see our bodies, feel them. But our souls, we can't feel. We can't touch. They're not tangible. Va'anachnu chayavim la'avodo tanu ba'avoda ze'avoda geluya va'avoda tzfuna. And so if we have two parts of us, that means that our efforts, our avoda, is going to have two different elements to it. We're going to have a revealed avoda, or a revealed efforts that we put in, and one that's hidden. And because of the nature of these two things being distinct and different, they actually don't really overlap that much. And then he says, what's Galuya? What are the revealed, open, physical, tangible kinds of avoda that we could have? This we might find surprising. Hagluya chovas ha'ivarim kamo hatzfila. That's so. So what's the second one? Fasting. Fasting, okay, that's a physical thing. A lot of times when we fast, it's not the most spiritual experience. Someone couldn't, you know, not eat breakfast ever, but 9 a.m. on a fast day, it's like, I don't think I'm going to make it. This is, it's not going to work. It's probably deeply psychological, but fasting, for better or worse, ends up being a very physical activity for us, and very rarely does it become a spiritually uplifting experience. So that being said, on Yom Kippur, I saw a stark difference, because on Rosh Hashanah we had lots of guests, and so in the morning before we went to shul, we had to like sit at the table, and my mom was doing cooking things, and she would always leave right after Birkas Kohanim to make sure that she could get everything ready for the guests. Yom Kippur, we just sit in shul, and the fact that we're fasting and we can't eat, Jews don't like do things half-halves, and so if we can eat, we're going to go big, we're going to eat a lot. It's not like, oh, we're going to have a nice small meal and not invite anyone over. If we can eat on Yom Kippur, we're going to. And so Yom Kippur, the fact that we don't eat, the fact that we're fasting, really does enable us to experience the spirituality of the day. But so fasting, I totally hear, fasting can be a physical activity. That's a reveal that's very, very easily tangible. What's the first thing that he says? Kamo hatzfila, and beginning of line 9, davening. Since when is tefillah, is davening something that's external? We talk about tefillah as being avodah shebalev. It's something that's supposed to be internal. And yet, Rovolbi's telling us that this is not an internal thing, it's an external thing. So I'm going to think about that for a second. Maybe it's... Yeah?
Because we're trying to... The external piece is we're trying to reach out to Hashem to develop a personal relationship with Hashem our doubt.
Interesting. I'm misusing internal, external. Those are not the right words, because you're right, that tefillah isn't external. It's both internal and external. That's why even in our silent Shemon Esrei, which is personal, that we whisper, it's in the plural language, because it's collective as well. But is tefillah more of a hidden activity or a revealed activity? Is it more of a tangible experience? I would think that it's not. And yet Revolbi's telling us that it is. And I think this is why. Because I'm sure it has never happened to anyone in this room, but I've heard such things happened where someone's davening and they're like, shoot, did I say Ashrei today? And they're like, not so sure. And actually, the Tosfos in Rosh Hashanah, in the Gemara, Chazal are telling us that we should be thankful to our heads, because our heads know when to bow during Modim. That someone could be davening, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, I'm bowing. I guess I must be up to Modim. And this was 1,500 years. I guess the Tosfos is quoting Yerushalmi. So this is 1,500 years ago. 1,500 years ago, people had issues of davening where they like got distracted and were thinking about other things and weren't totally focused, so they just bowed and didn't realize they were up to modem, and then they figured it out. And now you're like, well, I kind of feel like I should go back, but I'm not really supposed to go back, and so I guess I'll just finish and try again later. And thank God we get 3 times a day instead of just once. But this is cute and a little sad, but also cute. In Lamatzeach, we say, Ele barechev, ele basusim, v'anakdim shem Hashem elokinu naskir, that... And what does it actually mean? It means that, you know, some people, they worry about traveling, they worry about going on their horses and their chariots, but we call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's our goal, that's our ideal. Or, Eli Barakav, Eli Basusim, these people travel, they're taking trains, they're taking buses, they're taking horses to travel around, but we travel while we talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When I'm davening, saying Shemon Esrei, I'm thinking about all these different things, and we're not necessarily so focused. And so, but why? If tefillah is supposed to be something that's internal, there's an externality of it. The fact that I'm speaking, the fact that I'm standing and I'm sitting and I'm bowing, it gets very external. And even if Moshe Weinberger, who's coming in September 15th, mark your calendars, who is a deeply connected spiritual person, I guess you probably should describe him as Hasidic, although he's so much more than the sort of the narrow mindset that maybe some of us have when we describe people who are Hasidic. Rav Weinberger is an extraordinary over to Hashem, as far as I can tell. When he davens, he just stands straight. There's no shuckling, there's no back and forth, there's no ayayaying, he's just standing straight. His davening, as far as I can see, is very, very hidden. It's just him connecting to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. But even so, tefillah is external, because I can do it, and I can accomplish it, I can check it off. It's the difference between, I wrote this down, I heard a great line. It's the difference between humans doing and human being. That an avoda of enonira, working on something that's not visible, you can't do anything to accomplish that. I can't check it off, because I can have a whole list of spiritual activities, and they might all end up being very physical, even if they don't necessarily seem physical. There's another level, a goal of connecting to the divine that doesn't require any activity whatsoever. And that's not so easy for us to think about, not so easy for us to understand, because it's so much easier, it's so much more tangible for me to do something. And we've even trained ourselves and developed the ability to be able to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in things that are not so natural. Or maybe if we're going to connect to a person, we'll go out to coffee and we'll hang out. We're not going to do that with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we figure out other ways. We make brachos. We do things to connect us. But even that, explains Ravobi, that's all nira. That's visible. And what the goal of this sefer is to develop an ability to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu entirely external and separate from anything that we can physically do, anything that has a manifestation, anything where we can put a check mark. That's very hard.
So is it like the difference between remotely going through the davening? Because
very, very likely.
Versus trying to actually.
Right. So people talk about all the time that nowadays you have people who are Bala Tshuva, people who are from birth, and then you have robotic Jews who've been doing this a whole life, so they just keep doing it, but there's no meaning behind it. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate, but that's just what they do. I know a guy. I had associations with him. He's a very, very nice guy. He does a lot of chesed. And he told me he doesn't believe in God. Pashut doesn't believe in God. Doesn't think the Torah is minas shamayim anything. Like, you go to shul every week. He goes, yeah, like, this is my life. It's like a funny thing to think about. I can't imagine wanting to be frum if I didn't want to be frum. but some people are. Some people operate like that. But because so much of our frumkeit is physical, is something that is easily manifest. And so if we fixate too much on what I'm doing as opposed to what I'm experiencing, what's going on internally, that's not visible to anyone, even necessarily to me, we're gonna miss out on the opportunity. And so Ravobi continues. We're going to skip a little bit. But he says, we're going to skip actually all the way down to line 26. At the very, very end, it says, Vizeh. Vizeh ma shetzarek lahavin. Ki ein sofa kavano v'yas ha-shama b'guf l'shetichye oso b'chaya ha-heva ha-eila. Our bodies are naturally living in the physicality, and that's okay. Aval ikur b'ya bo hula zake koto zichuk mamish lahalosu l'shetichye We're physical beings, we're supposed to be physical beings. The notion of Kedusha is to take spirituality and combine it with physicality, which is why we say Kiddush in a physical way, with wine, which is extremely physical, and uplift and sanctify Shabbos. Kiddushin, when we get married, which is a very physical and very spiritual activity, is that combination. But the goal is that we should be so purified that our bodies are effectively just tool to the neshama. This comes up a lot in Eish Torahs, where they'll talk about, if you're riding a horse all day, then you differentiate between you and the horse. The horse is just how you're getting around. For Adam and Chava, before they ate from the Eitz Hadas, they had neshama, they were neshama, and then they had a horse. They called it their bodies, and it had arms and legs, but that they recognized there was a difference between their spirituality, their neshama, and their bodies. We don't have that difference. If you ask someone to point to themselves, they'll point to the chest, to their head, something. But we often think of my hands as being part of me. And they are, but only for a short period of time. Just like you'll rent a car and you'll be in the car for three years and then you get out of the car. So we're in this world for, God willing, 120 years, and we're going to do a lot of great things. And then our existence will continue for many, 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 many years afterward, outside of this horse, if you will. And so Ravobi wants us to develop an ability to recognize that I'm beyond just my body, that there's more to me than that. There's a medrash that says that Moshe Rabbeinu had purified himself so much that when it came time for him to die, his soul was like, no, I'm good. I want to stay here. This body is the best body you could ever imagine. It is entirely geared toward being a tool of spirituality. And so it didn't want to leave. Eventually it did, obviously. But to get to that point, and how are we going to get to that point? we're not going to discuss today. It takes probably like 80 years to like really figure it out. But just to be aware of the idea that even in my spiritual, my Torah, my mitzvos, there's a level of doing it. There's a level of being invested in it, and of recognizing that ideally my goal is just to be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we can do that, we've discussed, by making brachos. You make 100 brachos a day, you're living with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it's all within action. But you can also just exist with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I've noticed on more than one occasion, people who were Christian, like priests and pastors who converted to Judaism, are very good at this. They talk to God all the time. They feel like God's always with them, because there aren't that many mitzvos in Christianity, and so you get used to this notion of I'm with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, separate from the mitzvos I'm doing. We, Baruch Hashem, have tons of mitzvos, but sometimes we get bogged down in the mitzvah we're doing, and that's how I connect to God. And it doesn't just exist externally, but you can just be living with the Kodesh Baruch Hu and not doing anything else. You're sitting on the beach with your eyes closed and just being with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And are you doing a mitzvah? Maybe we could find one or two, you know, in the whole list, but that's not the goal. The goal is just to be connected to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And so on the next page, Rav Volbi says, this is the goal of the Sefer. And he quotes a Gemara in Brachos. It's around line 7, we're not going to look at it inside, but he quotes a Gemara in Brachos that says that brings comparisons between David HaMelech and really between people and a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And effectively says, how do you connect to something that's not physical? A Kodesh Baruch Hu is not physical. It's not tangible. So how do you connect to something that's not tangible? You have to be not tangible also. And so that connection, we've got sheets over there if you want, although we're not going to need them in just a moment. How do you connect to something that's not physical and not tangible? You have to be not physical and not tangible. The more spiritual, the more invisible we are, in the positive sense, the Einu Nira that Volbi's talking about, the more we can connect. That's the tool toward connecting to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The goof, our bodies are not going to connect to God. Our bodies are not going to get there. Only through our neshamas will we. Now, all that is very, very hard. But if we can think about it, we often, even though tangible literally means touching, tangible we can wrap our minds around things. So has anyone ever been to Holon, to the Blind Museum in Israel? It's an extraordinary experience. I highly recommend it. There are a lot of amazing spiritual experiences that you can have when you go to Israel. If someone gets off the plane, drives 20 minutes from Ben Gurion to Holon, goes to the Blind Museum, and leaves, they will have had an extraordinary experience. And I'm pretty sure that there's no necessarily Torah perspective that was used in creating this experience. But it's out of this world. It's a blind museum. You go in, and there are no lights whatsoever. You have to take off your watches, anything that might shine or glow, and you cannot see a thing. You spend at least about an hour in there with a guide who is blind, who shows you around. And first of all, it's just an interesting experience where like you're like, oh, I'm going to help you, Mr. Blind Person. And now you're like totally a mess. They're much more at home being blind in a world of people seeing than people who are seeing are at home in a blind world. But you go through the experience, and you go to a marketplace, and you go to a street corner, and you're walking around, and the first like half hour, you're basically trying to see things that you can't see. And you're like holding on to something and thinking like, oh, this is probably yellow, even though it doesn't matter at all. And at a certain point, they put you on a boat, and you're sitting there for a while. I'm sure that the boat is not really going anywhere, but they tell you that it is, but they can tell you whatever they want, you don't know. And you can really feel the movement of the water beneath you differently than you can in other cases, because we're not trying to see, but we can still feel, we can still manifest. Just because I can't see something doesn't mean I can't experience it. We often like to be able to see. We like to be able to understand and say, these are the dimensions, this is the time that it takes, whatever the experience is. The Blind Museum says, who says that you need to see something in order to get it? Then, this part's awesome. You go into like a theater. You sit down and they play classical music, like a symphony, and you never heard a symphony like this. It doesn't matter who's playing. Because you're not using your eyes, and because you're just trying to listen and to feel, you can feel the sounds. we like take a step out of our focus on on the colors that are in front of us, and we can feel something else. And that's part of that's like step one of this notion of trying to get outside of our bodies, of connecting to Kodesh Baruch Hu in an entirely non-physical sense. I can disconnect from my eyes, and maybe I can disconnect from other things also. That's what Ravobi's getting at. And he just says at the very bottom of the page, in the second to last line, Nira v'eino nira, this notion of visibility versus invisibility, of tangible versus intangible, hi hakdama l'kol ha'saga shel emes v'abasis l'kol avod datenu. This is really the foundation of all of our avoda. And that's what Ravobi's trying to get at in one way or another, of trying to connect us where we're not doing anything to connect. Now, we have about 7 minutes, and I'm going to go somewhat on a tangent, and we're going to go, this is all Torah's Ravobi, but it's not from Ravobi. This is Torah, this was the first Ali Shore piece I learned. I fell in love with it. I heard a shiur from Mordechai Berg. Mordechai Berg's a Rebbe in Mevaseret and other places, extraordinary speaker, and this had a tremendous impact on me. But first, I went to Yeshiva Netivaria. Rav Bina, we often talk about. He's very, very good at talking to 18-year-old boys, even though he's like in his 60s and old and Israeli, but somehow he still knows what to say to connect to these boys. And so he says, how are we going to connect to a Kodesh Baruch Hu? You never went on a date with him. If you want to know a girl, you go on a date with her. But that doesn't happen with God. So what are you supposed to do? How are you supposed to connect? And Rav Bina ultimately says, davening's really hard because we're not really connected. It's so hard to be connected. And so now, this I heard from Rav Mordechai Berg, but it's also my fault. We're going to be an apikores, or a kofir for a second. We're going to be a little bit heretical. A little bit over the edge. If someone's uncomfortable with that, I won't be insulted if you leave. And if I get kicked out of the kolo, then so be it. I think this is emes lamito. We live in a world without a Beis HaMikdash. We live in a world without tangible spirituality. The notion of avodah zarah in our minds is so crazy. Why would someone ever bow down to an idol? Why would someone ever worship the sun, the moon, maybe? Okay, fine, I can appreciate because they're like so cool and so impressive. Like, why would anyone ever bow down to an idol and think that maybe that has some value? Baal Peor that comes up in our parsha, like, what were they thinking? And it's very simple. Spirituality for us is non-tangible, but wasn't always non-tangible. Spirituality was something you could see. Mitzrayim was full of magic. It was like Hogwarts. Everyone could do magic, which is why when Moshe comes down, throws down a staff, and it turns into a snake, Paro is like, yeah, so? The Khartoumim were replicating the miracles. So if you watch the movies, they're like pulling shtick to replicate the miracles. They were doing miracles. They could literally change water to blood. That wasn't so impressive. It was impressive, but it was like not out of this world impressive. Spirituality was real. It was tangible. And so Avodah Zarah was tangible because we said, where is all this coming from? Where is all this spirituality that I see and feel in front of me? Where is it coming from? Maybe it's coming from this chair in front of me because I don't know where else it could be coming from. And the mission of the Jewish people was to recognize that it's not coming from a chair or from a table, from a piece of wood or metal, or halavai gold. It's coming from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, coming from something that we can't see because we take spirituality and we want to manifest it in something. We want to say, this is coming from something. I connect to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. How? In the physicality of my tefillah. Because the human inclination is to always connect spirituality and the things that are not nira, that are invisible, to something that I can wrap my mind around. But then the world changed. How? It's a fascinating Gemara. I believe it's in Avodah Zarah. It might be in Sanhedrin. But where basically Chazal davened that we don't want the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah anymore, and it went away. Very interesting. Well, you can discuss another time. If you want to read more about this, Rabbi Akiva Tatz has a book on the end of prophecy, which coincided with the end of Avodah Zarah, called As Dawn Ends the Night. It's his new book. It's blue. It's very, very good. Everything he writes is good, but this is very, very good. But we don't have this anymore. We don't have tangible spirituality. It's gone from the world. There's no more Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash was an extraordinarily inspiring experience. There were 10 miracles that happened every day. There was a fire that ate up the karbonos, ascended straight to heaven. There were all these things going on. It was awesome. And when you needed a pick-me-up, when you felt like you weren't doing so well, you just go visit the Beis HaMikdash, and you were surrounded by tangible spirituality. But we don't have that today. Now I want to have a spiritual experience. I go to the Kotel, and there are people pushing me out of the way, and there's someone asking for tzedakah, and there are a gazillion people yelling.
Friday night.
Yeah. And so the Kotel is an amazing experience, and people people connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu tremendously at that place. But there's no, it's like a joke of a comparison to think that what we experience in the Kotel is what we could be experiencing, which is why people, you know, say, why do we break a glass under a chuppah? So we're mourning for the Beis HaMikdash. That's like a very, what's the connection between these two things? This is what I think the truth is, and yachol liot that I'm wrong. Wedding days are like the happiest days of someone's life. God willing, it won't be one of the happiest, and every subsequent day will be. But to that point, it's the happiest day of a person's life. And at that happiest day, at the happiest moment, right? You know, it's like very exciting when a bride and groom in some circles will like hold hands right after breaking the glass. You're allowed to hold hands before Imesh Kechek also. But they always wait, and like the anticipation of, oh my gosh, finally. And at that moment, we say, hold on, you're very happy right now, right? You're out of this world ecstatic. I want you to understand that you're not really as happy as you think you are. You could be so much happier. Gemara in Sota says that fruit doesn't taste as good as it used to before when we had a Beis HaMikdash. The world is not as good as it used to be. But we don't necessarily recognize that. So at a wedding, we'll say, you could be so much happier. And so now is when you're mourning for the Beis HaMikdash, because you think you're at the height, you think you're at the top. You like barely scratch the surface. There's so much more to go. And that's when it's time to daven, that's when it's time to connect. And so if we're living in a world without a Beis HaMikdash, then why do people feel like they're not doing that well? This is somewhat different. This is part of Torah Shavuot, but a little bit different than what we're discussing right here. There are so many people, without question myself included, I'm not talking to myself. If I talk to myself, I do it in front of a mirror or just with my eyes closed, talking to everyone here, everyone in the recording, whatever. But this applies to me, I imagine, more than me, but who knows. People feel like they're not doing well. People feel like, oh, they're supposed to have this hidden avoda and I'm not really accomplishing it. We talk about making brachos and I'm not so good at making brachos. All the different things that we discussed in the past few weeks and in general, Torah lives, what we think about, we go through our days thinking, I'm not doing that well. I could be doing better. I saw an awesome tweet from Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz. And Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz is tremendous Talmid Chacham. He might be the Gadol HaDor in spreading Torah. He's came up with a 10-minute halakha, and now anytime there's any 10-minute recordings that you ever see, it's all basically because of him. The first person to do another 10-minute asked permission from Rav Aryeh Leibowitz. He's like, I didn't come up with 10 minutes. Just like, I did halakha in 10 minutes. He spreads Torah extraordinarily well. So he tweeted something from Rav Yisrael Reisman that the Yetzirah is going to try and get you not to learn Torah. But what if he can't get you not to learn Torah or not to do mitzvot? Then the Yetzer Hara is going to convince you that the mitzvot that you're doing are not good enough, that you're not spending enough time on them, you're not focusing on them enough, that the mitzvot you are doing are not as good as they could be. And then the Yetzer Hara wins. Here's where we really get into being kofrim, to real on heresy. Imagine, if you will, you're at home, and your spouse goes out to get milk. They say, oh, I'll be back in a few minutes, and there are dishes in the sink. Can you take care of the dishes? Sure, okay, fair. And then a day goes by, you don't hear anything. Weeks, months, 30 years go by, your spouse doesn't come back. Oh my gosh. Your spouse doesn't come back. And once in a while, they send you a postcard, hey, I'm here, hey, I'm there, but they're not with you. And so you pack every lunch, you figure out a way to pay for to pay for school, you get your kids married off, you're sending them to camp, you're doing everything for 30 years. 30 years later, you're sitting in your living room, there happen to be dishes in the sink today. Okay. And your spouse comes back in and says, I've been gone for 30 years. You couldn't do the dishes? You look at your spouse and say, are you kidding me? You've been gone for 30 years. Okay, the dishes are still in the sink. Big deal. They actually got cleaned, but there are still dishes in the sink. And you're going to be upset at me about that? Chalila, to think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not with us. And if anyone's listening to this recording, Rav Mordechai Berg says this on YU Torah. It's his first Eli Shor Shir, and he's says it much better, but these people are stuck with me. Of course HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us, but it's hard to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's hard to feel that. God's invisible. And so if I'm walking around feeling like God's invisible, then God's not here. God stepped out. I don't have a base of Middash where I can feel and sense it and experience Torah and spirituality. Then yeah, okay, maybe there are dishes in the sink. Maybe I'm not doing as well as I could. We talk about a lot of things in the Sefer, and maybe I'm not living up to every single one of them as best as I could. But we're doing really, really well. We're doing really, really, really well. And we're going to be we're not having the shirim for another few weeks. We're going to go through the hardest time of the year of 3 weeks and the 9 days and Tisha B'Av. and it's a depressing time to be Jewish. But why is that depressing? Because it's not because we stink, but because we want to be doing so much more. We need God's help also. Davening for the Beis HaMikdash doesn't have to be, I hope that I stop sinning and I hope I stop being such a nebuch that one day God will give me the Beis HaMikdash. No, God, we want to be doing better. We want to be feeling and experiencing spirituality, but it's so hard for us. So come home. Bring us the Beis HaMikdash. And Kodesh Baruch Hu is the first person to say this. There's no question in my mind that Kodesh Baruch Hu is clapping and cheering, jumping up and down, because so many people are convinced that their avodas doesn't mean anything, that it doesn't matter, that they're not doing a good job, and it could not be farther from the truth. And I'll prove it to you. There's a Gemara in Sukkah that says that at the end of days, in Olam Haba, or whatever the terminology we want to use, Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to slaughter the Yetzer Hara, and it's going to be laying in front of us. And for the tzaddik, and for the righteous people, for us, the people in this room, people listening, anyone who's learning Torah in any capacity, they're going to look and say, how did we climb this mountain? How did we do this? It's so incredible. I never thought I could accomplish something like that. And for the Risharim, the people who didn't do as well as they could have, it's going to look like a little hair. It's going to look like nothing. They're going to say, I can't believe I didn't beat that. It's that little nothing. But we often think that we're fighting against little hairs, and we're not really climbing mountains. We're totally climbing mountains. Anytime someone learns Torah, anytime someone does a mitzvah, make a bracha. Just think about a Kodesh Baruch Hu for 2 seconds. You're climbing mountains. And so we'll leave it at that. There's more to say. I could talk about this probably all day, but we're already over time. Over the course of the 3 weeks and the 9 days, we're supposed to mourn for the Beis HaMikdash. And yes, we should mourn for the fact that we didn't do a good enough job to keep it, and that in every generation where the Beis HaMikdash is not built, it's as if it was destroyed. But we should also mourn for the fact that we think that we destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, that we think it's our fault, when we're doing so tremendously well, and a Kodesh Baruch Hu is so happy. Without question, we can do better. I know that I can do better. But the Yetzer Hara is the one convincing us that we're not doing as well as we could, and it could not be farther from the truth. So Yasher Koach to everyone here, anyone listening, for coming for so many weeks to spend your Monday mornings, because without question, we're bringing Mashiach. Without question, Kodesh Baruch Hu could not be happier. And yeah, a Kodesh Baruch Hu can also be a little bit happier. We could do better, and we want to push ourselves to do better. But the number one foundation of Revolvi's book, the first layer, is not worrying about how we daven, not worrying about our brachos, not worrying about our interactions with our friends. It's making sure that we understand that we're doing very, very, very well. So thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. Have a wonderful week. A wonderful summer. Sorry, I went a little long.